Here's another listener essay.
This is Infants on Thrones.
Listener essay.
Listener essay. Listener essay.
Welcome back to Infants on Thrones. I'm Glenn Ostlund, and today's listener essay comes from Nelson. And is titled Reasons They Stay. Now, if you want to vote for this essay and give some private feedback to the author, visit our website. I'll give you the form letter pre-recorded detailed message at the end of the episode today. But for now, take it away, not President Nelson. Nelson?
Hello, my name is Nelson, and I thought I would use my recent increase in name recognition to enter this essay. I am not a qualified expert on the topics that I will discuss, but I have studied them. I would welcome anyone with feedback or criticism to provide such. I am just a well-intentioned hobbyist. This is an essay called Reasons They Stay. I'm going to give you the reasons they stay. And what do I mean by that? I mean that I will explain the reasons that people stay at church. Hearing that, you may be expecting a listicle in audio form, but I'm going to get a bit more abstract than that. You can be the judge of whether or not I succeed. The first thing to understand is that they, meaning the churchgoers, have a relationship with the LDS Church. You, chances are, also have a relationship with the church. In fact, you likely have a relationship with church leaders, scriptural figures, and even God. Now, before you militaristic atheists start breaking out pitchforks, allow me to explain what I mean when I say you have a relationship with God. Relationship is the way that two things are connected. In this essay, I'll be talking about some of the relationships found in church and the support that they provide. But how can I have a relationship with God when he's not real? Cries the atheist, unsure of whether their pitchfork is needed. Well, let me explain. A term that has gained traction, but deserves far wider recognition, is parasocial relationship. Parasocial relationship is the idea of a one-sided relationship. Examples include podcast listeners and the podcast hosts, viewers and characters in TV shows, and voters and political figures. One side gets the feeling that they know the other, and that they have a personal relationship with them, even though the other side generally is, at most, only peripherally aware of their existence. In a society that seems to be getting simultaneously more connected and more isolated, parasocial relationships have become increasingly prominent. It is important to note that, like most relationships, parasocial relationships can range from good to bad, in effect. And, like all relationships, it is important to understand the nature of said relationship. The parasocial relationship can not only be used by public figures trying to increase the loyalty of their audience slash consumers, but by well-meaning figures who are trying to cultivate good. For example, think of the intimate way Mr. Rogers or Bob Ross address you in their videos. Chances are they don't actually know you, but it can feel like they do. Think of how public figures are able to reach millions with their words and help move progress forward. But again, this is a one-sided relationship. The other side does not need to even exist. Think about how often we feel like we know and care for characters in our favorite shows. I, myself, have, since I was a kid, found characters in books to be some of the most cherished figures in my life. The subject and mechanics of parasocial relationships are endlessly fascinating to me. But we're here to discuss the reasons that people stay at church. So before we get to those reasons, let's talk about three parasocial relationships that can be found in the context of church. The three we will discuss are relationships with church leaders, scriptural characters, and God. With church leaders, this can be a mix between parasocial and two-sided relationships. Remember that though we try to break things into categories, there are no lines in nature, and trying to fit things into clear categories will mainly result in frustration. But back to church leaders. The church loves these one-sided relationships. Why do you think they have kids memorize the names of the apostles and read about their lives? To establish the feeling that you have a relationship with this person.
Families will have pictures of the first presidency with the pictures of their other loved ones, because it establishes the feeling that you know them, and they are just a good, regular church leader, like the kind you meet every Sunday. They aren't church employees lavished in wealth, but kind bishopric members that you know and know you. I think that this is a large part of why church members love the opportunity to meet general authorities. Your brain can't really tell the difference between a one-sided relationship and a standard kind. The church members feel like the general authorities already know them, and they have the whitewashed biographies from conference and elsewhere that make the authorities seem almost superhuman. This intimacy, plus veneration, is a powerful cocktail. The other two relationships are rather connected, being scriptural figures and God. These are a category of person that you never meet, but your time at church is dominated by attempts at creating, nurturing, and expanding these relationships. One of the first things they will do at church is establish the presence of these relationships. Remember the concept of the constant companionship of the Holy Ghost? Or how about visiting angels? Those can range from dead relatives to scriptural characters. The command to pray always and to always listen to the Spirit is to get the person always thinking about these figures, so the relationship can grow in strength and influence. The church will also establish personas for these relationships. For scriptural figures, this is done by expanding off the base text with art, recreations, and lessons. Have you ever been in a class where they have talked about how Nephi must have been incredulous with the actions of his brothers? Why are you doubting? You just saw an angel, they might say. Lessons where you provide feelings and characteristics to the scriptural figures bolster the text beyond the actual words. This not only makes the scriptures a lot more believable, this will help the words seem a lot more profound. These aren't just random names on the page. These are the names of people you know, even beyond your standard Noah and Moses. All churches do this with God. As I mentioned before, they will want you to feel like God is there, and they will also provide characteristics. Why do you think that church leaders spend so long on establishing the characteristics of God? God is love. God is charity. God cares about this. God cares about you. God is always watching. God is always loving, patient, peaceful, righteous, just, protecting, joyful, empathetic, comforting, virtuous, faithful, charitable, humble, proud, diligent, and anything else a church leader wants to advocate for. See the idea of supply-side Jesus. Any out-of-character actions in the scriptures or anything else do not matter. The only idea that matters is your idea of this persona. Because if you have an idea of what this being is, you can develop a relationship with them. And once this relationship is established, there are a host of benefits that the church can gain from this. One simple example is the guilt that members feel if they go against the church's teachings. There is a sense of betrayal, because in a sense you have actually betrayed this parasocial relationship with God and the church. I do not mean to suggest to you whether or not God exists. I would, however, suggest that you take a look at who is telling you what about figures you have in your life, because they are influencing you. We cannot wall ourselves off from influence, nor should we try, but I do think that we should be as aware of the effects things have as we can. You should also be aware of this when talking to members about the church. The church leader you're bad-mouthing isn't some random executive, but a close family friend. When you say the Book of Mormon isn't true, you're telling them their relationships with the characters in it are not valid. When you speak of God, you may very well be attacking one of their closest relationships. These are real relationships. They may be one-sided, but they provide emotional support and should be recognized as an important factor in religious people's lives. I think that you can probably see how this would keep people going to church. But there is another aspect, and that is support. Again, I'll need to explain a bit of psychology. First, we talked about relationships, and now we talk about the support those relationships provide. One psychologist explained to me relationships generally provide three types of support: emotional, educational, and practical. I'll explain them with examples. Emotional is the empathetic listener, the hug from the dog, or the nice note. Educational is the training from a coworker, the fitness coach, or most of the work of advisors. Practical is the help moving, the financial support during a tough time, or the shoveling of snow. Again, emotional, educational, and practical. We generally understand this intuitively. We have people in our life that we go to for advice, help, or to just have a nice talk with. A lot of friction in relationships is caused by different expectations when looking at these types of support. Cue the "you just want to solve the problem when I want you to listen" trope. A good way to help relationships is to recognize what type of support your partner wants and try to address that. Often those closest to us want all the types of support from us. And when that happens, and you're generally the friend to laugh with person, the advice-giving person, or practical help person, then you can often give support that you're good at, but that isn't needed. And again, what does this have to do with the LDS Church? Well, I think that the reasons people stay fall into these same types of support. People stay in the church because their relationship with the church and all that pertains, with the parasocial relationships, with relationship with God, scriptural characters, and church leaders, provides emotional, educational, and practical support. First, emotional. This includes their social network, but it also includes the emotional feelings gotten from the parasocial relationships previously discussed. There are many, many aspects to the support, but I think the crown jewel is the feeling of being a good person. I've been told by my parents that my criticisms of the church are invalid because we're not bad people, the ward members are not bad people, and the church leaders are not bad people. The feeling of being a good person is powerful. This provides Mormons with the theological arrogance that they are known for. And if you ever question if you're a good person, then just look to those parasocial relationships. Those are good people, right? God is a good person. Joseph Smith was a good person. The church leaders are good people. If they are good people and you're doing what they say, then you must be a good person. This is another reason why establishing the personas of the parasocial relationships is very, very important. Next is educational. If the church is true, then why wouldn't you want to follow its teachings and learn its truth? You have prophets, scriptures, and spirits to teach you the truth. When you have people advocating for raising your kids in the church so they can learn good principles, this is the support that I think they are advocating. Again, it doesn't matter to the brain if this is true education or not. The brain cannot distinguish between these elements in isolation. Each of these are connected to parasocial relationships, and each feed and defend each other. Again, there are no lines in nature. Each of these supports with their relationships and parasocial relationships are why people stay. Lindsay Hansen Park has spoken about how some people leave the church without considering truth claims. Others leave only based on truth claims, and then others go to church without believing in any of it because of the society. You may not be able to know the exact kinds of support that keep your church-going loved one going, but hopefully this provides a bit of perspective. If you've left the church, was it a collapse of one of these supports that did it? Was it because you no longer felt like associating with the church meant you were a good person or were doing good? Was it because you found out that they had been lying to you? Or were you not getting what you needed out of church? In summary, the reasons why people stay in the church are due to the support given in relationships. This support includes emotional, educational, and practical. And the relationships include one-sided, or in other words, parasocial, relationships. I hope you share your thoughts. Did I miss something? Am I wrong? I love to improve what I think. Thank you.
Thank you for the listener essay. We desire all to receive it. And if you want to vote for it, go to the website and vote for it and give the author some feedback. And then tune in again tomorrow because we'll be... We'll be what? It's over. This is the last essay of the contest. This is number 14 of 14. It's the final one. So I'll go ahead and leave this pre-recorded message for anybody who needs to know how to go and vote for Nelson, if you want to go and vote for Nelson and provide him feedback. But thank you, everyone, all 14 of you. And there's going to be 10 days of no more essays. So those who haven't listened to the first 14 can listen and can give feedback. And then winners will be announced early in March. Thanks.
Back.
I'll have all the long-winded fancy details as an Easter egg, so you can skip over it if you want, or listen to it if you want. It'll be there after Zoe says, thank you for listening to Infants on Thrones.
That's how we roll.
Hi, this is Hillary.
Matthew Ryan.
Carol.
Keith.
Ashley. And I like to play bingo online while listening to Infants on Thrones.
You can comment on this episode on the website, infantsonthrones.com.
And if you really like what you hear,
consider supporting us on Patreon for as little as $1 per episode, capped at whatever total amount you want to cap that at. I mean, where do you think the money is coming from to award prizes to the listener essays, huh? Pretty cool stuff we're doing on Infants on Thrones. Also,
give the Quorum a 5-star rating and write a short review on iTunes.
I did. Anyone for the closing prayer?
Thank you for listening to
Infants on Thrones.
Infants on Thrones.
Well, that was a great listener essay, wasn't it? Ready to go vote for it? Now, if you've heard this before and you're an old pro at voting for these essays, you can just skip over this part. Now, here's how this is going to work. As it stands right now, I have 14 listener essays, and that means that for the next 2 weeks, starting today, February 7th, ending on February 20th, you will be hearing one listener essay per day, at least for those of you who listen in real time once the episode is released. And FYI, some of these essays were submitted to us without a title, so I gave them a title myself. So if you think the title of the essay is stupid, well, that's probably my fault, because damn if I don't love me some stupid. But here's the really exciting part. One of these 14 essays will win $218, because it's 2018 now, and we like to be cute and stupid about things. But we're not able to award a $2,000 prize just yet, okay? Another essay will win $109, half of the $218, and I think I actually got the math right this time, I think. And a third will win $50, and you listeners get to choose who these winners will be. And you'll also be able to give private feedback to each author. So here's how that's going to happen. After you listen to the essay today, go to our website, infantsonthrones.com. Find the post for the essay that you listen to, and be sure that you have the author's name and the essay title right so that your feedback goes to the right place. Click on the survey that's associated with that essay, and it's going to be there on the post. Fill out the survey and submit it, and then sit back and breathe in and breathe out. And feel life's energy flow through you and bask in the warm feeling of knowing that you made a difference in the life of someone brave enough to submit a listener essay to Infants on Thrones. Now, when you fill out these surveys, you're going to be asked two things primarily. One, to rate the essay on a scale of 1 to 5. And then you'll also have the opportunity to write in some of your thoughts, some of your feedback for the author. It'll only take a few minutes, and then boom, you're done. Now, you can do this for every single essay, every single one of these 14 essays. You can vote or you can put your feedback for each one of these 14 essays, but you can only vote once for each essay. Does that make sense? Okay. Now, voting will be open through the entire month of February, even though the essays will stop on the 20th. You'll still be able to vote for the last week or so of February. On March 1st, voting will be closed, and then the winners will be announced on Saturday, March 3rd. Now, some of you may be wondering, is there a deadline for submitting essays? Well, no, not really. Now, this contest with these 14 essays, That will end with the final essay being released on February 20th, but my hope is that as you listen to these essays, you will feel inspired to make one yourself and share your unique view of the world with the rest of our listening audience. So if you want to do that, submit it, and as soon as we get another 10 to 15 essays, we'll start another contest. How's that? Make sense? Pretty good deal, huh? And isn't that really how the world's supposed to work anyway? I mean, think of it like this. It could be kind of like if you were kneeling at an altar and you looked up and you saw this big mirror on the wall in front of you. And in that mirror, you could see not only your own reflection looking back at you, but you could see the reflection of the mirror on the wall behind you and the back of your head. And then in that reflection, you also saw another reflection of yourself, both front and back, stretching outward and onward, upward throughout all generations of time and throughout all eternity, like Rey in the new Star Wars movie, if Rey had been at an altar and married herself. Can you marry yourself? What is that, Master Wedshin? I don't know, in some kind of a weird Mormon Jedi temple ceremony thing that distinguishes one type of nerd from other types of nerds. That's kind of what this essay contest is like. No, I don't know. Will it end? Can you submit essays forever and ever and be like Rey? I don't know. See, what did I tell you? I love me some stupid. So this is the deal. Infant Listener Essay Contest. Please participate and make this thing super special, because special isn't just a euphemism anymore. Or something remarkable like that.
Hi, this is Hillary.
Matthew Ryan.
Carol.
Keith.
Ashley.
And I like to play bingo online while listening to Infants on Thrones.
You can comment on this episode on the website, infantsonthrones.com.
And if you really like what you hear,
consider supporting us on Patreon for as little as $1 per episode, capped at whatever total amount you want to cap that at. I mean, where do you think the money is coming from to award prizes to the listener essays, huh? Pretty cool stuff we're doing on Infants on Thrones. Also,
give the Quorum a 5-star rating and write a short review on iTunes.
I did.
Anyone for the closing prayer?
Thank you for listening to
Infants on Thrones.
Infants on Thrones.